you have bats on your farm, it's a good sign your land is ecologically healthy. But since they come out at night, it can be tricky to know what bats are there, what is missing. So how can you encourage bats? In this pod, Donna Mullen, a farmer from Meath with 43 acres, explains everything you need to know about making your land a magnet for bats. Donna, thank you for joining me today. You bought a 43-acre farm about 20 years ago, and you've now transformed it into a nature reserve. Perhaps you could just tell us a bit about your farm for those of us who don't know it, and what it looks like, and even what it sounds like if you were to visit there in like late spring.
We bought a farm, about 20 years ago. We used to watch, you know, Out of Africa, and there was a woman who bought a farm in Africa, and it all seemed kind of amazing. She had all these animals and everything, and we kind of decided we'd do the same, but in North Meath. So it wasn't quite as sunny or glamorous or anything. Basically, when we came, it was a piggery and three big fields, all full of ryegrass. It's kind of been a lifetime's work, trying to get as many different types of habitats into the farm as possible, while still making money from the farm. You know, it has to do that too. Gosh, I'd say there's about, 11 different parts to the farm. We put in lots and lots of hedgerows, and we put in some forestry and some biomass willow. Some ponds. We put in a big pond for newts. And then just this year, we put in two little ponds in our forestry. And then we have we're in the GLOS scheme. So we have some birdseed crop, which brings in a lot of birds. And we have some grassland because we keep horses and pigs and donkeys and chickens. It's nearly like, I looked up the old census, and it's nearly like in the olden days, farms had a little bit of everything. And I suppose we're trying to recreate that. And you're asking what it sounds like. You might hear the donkey braying in the background because he hasn't been fed yet this morning.
He's looking for his breakfast. Yeah. We're here to talk about bats. You obviously have bats on your farm. Well, what species do you have?
We're lucky that we have seven species of bats here. We have common pipistrelles and soprano pipistrelles. They're the ones who live in houses, and we're lucky that they do live in our house. But the numbers of them are crashing. Even when we came here first, even with everything we've done, the numbers are going down and down. We have Natterer's bats, we have Dobenton's bats, brown long-eared bats, and we actually have Lysaert's bats as well. And we have Nathusius pipistrelle. That's a bat that it's like they invented Brexit before Brexit actually happened. The males come across the border from the north, but the females don't. Okay. So the males come and sing all the time. And there's some really good roosts up the north of Nathusius pipistrelles. And the males come across and sing all night, trying to attract a female. Now, there has apparently been a roost found in Wexford recently of these Nathusius pipistrelles. But they're the only time the girls have come across the border. So we have the odd male Nathusius calling, but so far can't get any women here for them.
Okay. When you say singing, is it something we'd expect to hear, or is that something that you'd only hear with a bat detector?
Yeah, actually our kids can hear it. As you get older, the pitch you can hear goes down. So I can't hear them anymore. I have to use a bat detector. But my kids can hear them. And even like I used to take my son out when he was quite young, hearing the bats, and it would drive me absolutely mad, because not only could he hear them, he could tell the species apart. He'd say, that's a soprano pipistrelle because it's a higher note than the other one. I can hear that's a common pipistrelle. But I can't hear any of them. Sometimes, and my husband can hear Leisler's bats. They're good and big, and it's basically they've got a big, strong voice. And again, although it's ultrasound, they're just that bit louder. So sadly, I have to have the bat detector in order to hear anything. But you can pick up bat detectors pretty cheap. They're a great thing to get as a Christmas present. And it just means when you have the detector, you'll hear them and then you'll see them. Like so many people have said to me, I've never seen a bat on my farm before. But it's dark and you don't know where to look. And it's quite difficult to see them, without the detector.
Where would you expect to see them when you're on a farm?
You'll definitely see them along waterways. So any rivers, you'll see them there. And the Darbentin's bat is a bat that flies about a foot above the water in a straight line. So if you kind of hunch down beside the water, you'll see they kind of go up and down in lines. They have really big feet and kind of like slightly baldy eyes. So it looks like they're wearing glasses, and they scoop up all the insects with their feet. So you'll see them all right along the waterway. And along big trees, I just have some old horse chestnuts, and you can see the bats flying around there at nighttime. Somewhere where there's no light, light pollution is a big problem for bats. So they like to stay in dark places.
On a farm, you might have kind of big lights in your sheds. For the bats, it would kind of, is it more important to kind of, if you can, turn those lights off at night?
Yes. Yeah. It's better to switch the lights off at night. Now, obviously, in the wintertime, you're going to need the lights on because, you know, it's dark very early. Actually, it's like it really doesn't matter so much in the wintertime because the bats are hibernating. But certainly in the summertime, keep the lights off at nighttime. It's also better for the animals. Animals also need dark, you know, whatever animals are in there, yeah, to sleep, or even put lights on a sensor timer so that it's only when you need to be in there and you're moving around that the lights are on. Light pollution is a real problem. And actually, you know, I'm really seeing it that because farms are dark areas, we're getting lots of bats. It's kind of in the cities and places where there's so much street lighting and light pollution, the bat numbers are absolutely crashing.
So why is it beneficial for a farmer to have bats on their farm?
Each bat eats about 3,000 insects a night. So they're, in a way, they're a natural pesticide. They're going out eating, like that's even our smallest bats, our pipistrelles. And the pregnant ones, like they need to eat about a third of the body weight every night. So they're eating a ton of insects. If you have bats on your farm, it's really just a very good sign that your farm is in a good ecological health. A bat is an apex predator, so it means kind of it's top of the food chain, and it just means that there's lots of food around for it to eat. But a lot of the time, where there's animals and dung, the bats are there, and they're going and they're eating up a lot of these insects. And I know there's also a disease, I think it's called blue tongue, that's carried by midges. And again, the bats help in eating the midges and preventing this the spread of blue tongue. They also eat horse flies and they're generally the midges that are biting us. You know, they used to think, oh, bats, they get caught in your hair, you know, because bats will come pretty close to you sometimes. But actually, if you're walking along, there's often a little cloud of midges ready to bite you over your head. And that's what they're after. So they're coming close to eat what's trying to eat you, you know. They're quite a defenseless little animal. And the numbers are just crashing worldwide. They can only have one baby every year, every second year. So they're very, very slow to reproduce. And that's really their downfall. You know, they're so poor at replacing themselves.
The numbers are crashing of the bats, even though that you've kind of created all these habitats on your land.
Well, the numbers that were in our house have crashed. But actually, we think they've gone to a neighbor's house. a neighbor re-roofed and I think the bats have gone there, and it's actually, I think, hopefully that just their house is nicer than ours, warmer and cozier. So I think that's where they've gone. But we've actually really increased the amount of species on our farm. So now we have like a few of everything. Bringing in all the different habitats has just brought in a bigger range of species. So, you know, so that's really good. Some species are just really reliant on old farm buildings. Things like the brown long-eared bat, they love to live in old barns and old farmhouses. They like that big kind of apex roof and where timber meets stone. You know, and our farm has a lot, well, they're not those pretty old stone buildings, but it has a lot of just little outbuildings. And you know, it can be a problem for farmers because the buildings aren't, you know, they aren't worth kind of, you can't, they're too small to put a tractor in and whatever. And so they aren't really worth doing up or keeping. It costs a lot of money to keep them. And yet really they're great habitats for wildlife, or, you know, bats live in these, the gaps in the stone, and so do birds. But under the glass scheme, there's a heritage Branches. Heritage and Buildings Scheme. It's organised by the Heritage Council, and they give out grants to farmers for the upkeep of these old buildings. And they, as part of it, you get a bat survey, so you know what you've got there, and the work is carried out around the bats, so that you know you don't disturb them. And these buildings are restored both as architectural heritage and also as a place for bats and swallows to live in, and barn owls.
So it's a win-win, and you get some guidance on what you can leave in your build, like if you leave holes or entry points for the bats, etc., like that, and they obviously guide you through that process.
Exactly. You can leave holes for them, and you like simple things like you use untreated timber. You know, timber treatment kills bats because the bats tend to tuck right up against it, so they're very prone to getting poisoned by timber treatment. But there's other things that farmers can do too. They can, you know, they can leave wetlands there. They can put in ponds. Hedgerow is very important. Hedgerows are just really roadways for bats and all other kinds of wildlife too. So putting in hedgerows, connecting hedgerows to other hedgerows. So, you know, like it's all great, whatever, having a lovely road, but it doesn't connect anywhere. It's no good for you. And making corners in hedgerows, often like our farm, it's actually very windy on our farm. So those little places where there's corners and nooks and crannies, it kind of stops the wind, and it makes it nice for the insects can kind of shelter there, and then the bats can come and eat them.
So you were saying the main things to consider for a farmer to consider if they want to trap bats their land is thickening their hedgerows, providing corridors. So, you know, hedgerows meet hedgerows, parkland areas, maybe leaving gaps so that they can get into the apex of old stone sheds and stuff. Is there any other things that you would like farmers to consider if they want to attract bats to their land?
Yes, you can put up bat boxes. And again, that's funded under the GLAS scheme. Now, there's a little problem really with bat boxes. Well, a slight problem in that what people tend to think, oh, bat boxes are great. I'll get the bats out of my house. I'll put up some bat boxes and, you know, I'm providing a habitat and everything is fine. Bat boxes are fine for male bats or like just individual bats, females that aren't breeding. I always say bat boxes are like student accommodation. You know, it's kind of grand, you know, for a temporary short time. And you have your little bachelor pad and everything is fine. But, you know, when you're having your babies, you want a bit more comfort. And you need, the bats need a temperature of 30 degrees to have the babies in, which is really very hot. So you can't get that level of heat in a bat box. So that's why they go into houses or buildings or under felt to get that temperature. And we tried all kinds of things here, heating bat boxes and everything to try and get the temperature up. And we can't do it. It just hasn't happened for us yet. So bat boxes are great, but, you know, they will only help those bats. They're grand for hibernating. Last night I had four bats hibernating in bat boxes outside in our barn. They're really good in barns. And another thing you can do is put timbers together. You know where there's joists? Just run another timber along the joist about the width of your thumb apart, about 18 millimetres apart from the other joist. And we just did that. It costs about a tenner. Very cheap to do. A little bit of bituminous felt on the other side of the joist to trap a little bit of heat. And we've had bats hibernating the whole winter long in these kind of fake joists in our barn too. And it's very, very successful because they like where timber meets other timber. The bats really like to be squashed. Another problem really with bat boxes is a lot of them come from England and the entrance of them are too big. They're bigger bats in England than we have here. And the entrance is really big. And it's like, I suppose it's like having a house with no front door on it. The bats, they like to be squashed and they don't feel safe if there's a big entrance. I suppose they think some animal's paw might run in and grab them. So a lot of the bat boxes that we're putting up here aren't being used. So really the test to do is to stick your thumb into the entrance of any bat box you're going to buy. And your thumb should be just squashy. You know, if there's a bit of room around your thumb, then the entrance is too big. It's 15 to 18 millimeters is the width. But if you're like me, you'll be never carrying a measuring tape to measure anything like that. But everybody's thumb is about that size. And that's so when you're buying a bat box, whatever, in a hardware shop or whatever, just try the
make sure. Yeah, I assume there's a lot of this type of information up on Bat Conservation Ireland if people want to know more information about it. If you have bats in your attic, they don't actually cause damage, do they? They're just roosting and or hibernating.
Exactly. Most people, when they have bats in their house, it's just in the summertime. It's just those girls going in to have their babies. So it would be May to September. They leave in September and they're just in there really for the heat. And really, anyone who has bats in their house should really be applauded, because these roosts are the breeding roosts and they're absolutely crucial. You know, I would love to see farmers or anyone who has maternity roosts, you know, getting some kind of recognition, be it grants or I don't know what. But, you know, they are really doing a bit for conservation. And bats don't cause any damage to your house. Now, the common pipistrelle, if your family have lots of bats, it's probably sorry, soprano pipistrelles that they have. They have big numbers of roosts, and sometimes you can get a lot of droppings. So we say to people just to put down plastic sheeting, and then you can pull out the sheeting at the end of the year, and that's your droppings gotten rid of. That the droppings really can be the only problem. Bats don't chew wiring. They don't have teeth for chewing. They don't gnaw, they don't make any holes, and they only have one baby every year, every 2 years. So if you have, whatever, you know, 30 bats this year, next year you'll have 30 bats again, and you have the numbers really don't really increase or anything, unless something happens like another roost falls down or whatever. You tend to have the same amount of bats every year, and they'd be gone in September.
Just one last final thing. I noticed ourselves here, we dug a pond there a few years ago, and one of the most instant things that came, it was kind of in the warm summer's evening, about a month or two after, is just these wonderful flight of the bats as they were catching the insects. And it was just lovely to watch, actually. It was kind of like these fighter jets kind of swirling around the pond. So a pond is obviously a great way to attract bats onto your land as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're looking at kind of bang for your buck, the most nature you can get for the least amount of money, the best thing you can do is to make a pond. And, you know, the bigger the pond, the better. And also, you know, sometimes doing nothing is very important. Don't drain wetlands, just let it sit, you know, that kind of thing. But bats are great in that, like most wildlife, they run away when they see you. Even trying to look at birds or foxes or anything, they'll be gone. Whereas bats are just, they live in their own little world and they're oblivious too. So the great thing for bringing kids out to sea, and if you have a pond and you bring kids out at nighttime with torches and go down and watch the bats, it's really wonderful. Bat Conservation Ireland do lots of walks all over the summer months, especially during Biodiversity Week and during Heritage Week. And they take out groups of people to show them and bring them usually to a waterway and show them bats. And it's really, it's just a fabulous night. It's a lovely, lovely thing to do. I also have friends that have a barbecue every year when their bats come back to their house in May every year. They have a barbecue and they do the count, the midsummer count, and count how many have come back to them. So that's a lovely way to enjoy them too.
Donna Mullen, thanks very much. It's really nice to have such an enthusiastic spokesperson for bats and how to attract them to your land. Thank you.
Thanks a million. Lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for listening. Please share, subscribe and rate this podcast. And if you have any questions, email me info@farmingfornature.ie or connect with us on Twitter @farmfornature.